This is wrestling. Pro wrestling. WWE. Get that through your thick.
Yeah.
Skull.
That's fucked up.
Welcome to episode 157 of the Solomonster Sounds Off on SEScoops.com. It is Sunday, May 1st, 2011. I am the Solomonster here with you. A couple of notes here right off the top here. Just want to make a quick mention of last week's show, episode 156. I think I mentioned this on Twitter and Facebook, and for those of you who may have missed it, I want to thank everybody who listened to and downloaded last week's show, recommended other people listen to it and what have you. Last week's show, within a couple of days of it going up, became the most downloaded sound off in the history of sound offs here on SE Scoops. So I thank all of you for that. And given the main subject matter of the show, I'm actually glad it was that episode. It certainly stirred up quite a bit of debate in the comments section. It was arguably the most controversial sound. You know, since WWE likes to call John Cena the most controversial champion in history, I think I could call last week's episode of this show the most controversial sound-off that I've ever done, just based on the feedback and the comments that were left. And you know what? If it stirs up a debate and a discussion, and a healthy one at that, I have no problem with it. I think it's a good thing. So thank you to everybody who listened to the show and sent in your feedback. Very much appreciated. You can go back, by the way, if you missed it. Episode 156 is up in the archives. And the other thing I wanted to talk about here is I just wanted to make mention of the annual White House Correspondents' Dinner, which took place last night. And obviously some of you are aware of this. Some of you posted about it on my Facebook. But when President Obama came out to do his introductory speech, as is customary, and for those of you who don't know what the White House Correspondents' Dinner is, essentially it is a lighthearted gathering of the media elite. Even people from Hollywood often will show up, and the president is there to kind of poke some fun at himself, and he pokes fun at some of the other people in the room, some of the reporters. It's just a lighthearted affair that usually turns serious more towards the end, but it's a fun time. And obviously the president has been just beaten up by a whole bunch of different people recently, and it has not been an easy time for the president here in the U.S. And the introductory video at the beginning of the dinner to introduce him was actually set to the tune of Real American, of course, Hulk Hogan's theme music. And I put a smile on my face, I'll tell you that much. Just the knowledge that the President of the United States in 2011 is using Real American as his entrance music makes me smile. And what also made me smile was the lighthearted jabs, I guess you would call them, that President Obama had for one Donald Trump, who of course is, I guess you could say Trump is big in the wrestling world. He certainly has had some level of involvement with WWE over the years and was involved in the biggest money match in the history of WrestleMania. And you know what? The Donald is fine when he's in that realm. In WWE, I thought pretty much everything Trump was involved in was pretty much great stuff. Of course, Donald Trump in real life is a jackass. He's a caricature of himself. Nobody could possibly take what he has to say seriously. He's not a dumb guy, but he's an asshole. And he's an asshole that, you know, for all the talk about people in the wrestling business, whether it's a promoter or if it's a John Cena or a Hulk Hogan would be a great example of that. People who spew bullshit out of their mouths that even they cannot possibly believe. Donald Trump may be the king of that. And he certainly has been making it a rough time for the president here in this country the last couple of weeks. You know, he was leading the whole thing about where's your birth certificate, let's see your college records. I'm not going to get into the whole thing, but the point is, the president had some really good jabs at Donald Trump, and Trump was in attendance at the dinner with his wife. And when he would make these jokes, when Obama would make these jokes, the camera would pan over to Trump in the audience, who really wasn't having all that much fun. He did not have a smile on his face. And if he thought that was rough, then I would suggest to him that this whole hoopla about whether or not he'll be running for president, let's just put it this way. At one time, Hulk Hogan announced that he would be running. He announced his candidacy for the president of the United States. And obviously, that went nowhere. And Vince McMahon never announced that he was running for the presidency. He's kind of, over the years, there's been times when he's poked fun at the idea that perhaps he should run for president, and that would certainly be interesting, I will say that, but obviously it never happened, it never will. And to any of the people out there who think that Donald Trump is going to become president, and if he becomes president, then, you know, this could be a good thing for WWE. First of all, I don't see what one has to do with the other, number one. Number two, he ain't running for president. I would bet an enormous sum of money that he is not running for president, so don't get your hopes up. But that was actually a lot of fun to watch. If you want to go watch the video, it's on YouTube, and watch the beginning with the video, because not only does he use Real American for his intro music, but they, you know, in the video clips in the, that are actually in the video, you know, there's a clip from the old Transformers cartoon, which I guess is now considered part of Americana. There's actually clips of Hogan. I mean, there were actually clips of Hulk Hogan with the title celebrating back in the day in the video. I just thought that was tremendous stuff. So he obviously has a wrestling fan on his staff, and that's always good to see. So check that out. Before we get into the draft stuff, I want to talk a little bit of MMA here, because there was a big pay-per-view this weekend. And no, I'm not talking about Extreme Rules. I'm talking about UFC 129, which emanated from the Rogers Center, although I still call it Sky Dome, in Toronto. Of course, the site of many a WrestleMania moment. WrestleMania, actually two WrestleManias previously were at Sky Dome. I'm sure there'll be another one soon enough. 55,000 plus in attendance, which made this the most well-attended North American MMA event in history. It's just unheard of to consider a UFC show as popular as UFC and mixed martial arts is these days, and a crowd of 55,000 people. It was quite a spectacle. And I was on the fence and decided a couple of hours before the show that I would, in fact, be plunking down my money and purchasing the pay-per-view. And I'll tell you what, I'm glad I did. It was actually a really, really good show, except for the main event. Just a really fun show, some really great fights. At the end of the day, I decided to put my money towards this pay-per-view because, let's be honest here, okay? Who could possibly want to spend $50 to watch Extreme Rules? I mean, even if Christian, if you're a Christian fan, I don't mean religiously, I mean if you are a fan of the wrestler Christian, and you think he might actually have a shot, which he does, he has a better than good chance, as a matter of fact, of becoming world heavyweight champion for the very first time in WWE. Really? Is that enough reason to spend $50 on Extreme Rules? Nobody gives a shit about that show. First of all, they're a victim of circumstance. Their pay-per-view coming on the same weekend as one of the biggest UFC events of all time will not help them. But really, the pay-per-view after WrestleMania is always a dud. It just is, because you're coming off your big show of the year. The card, quite frankly, aside from what I think will be a very good ladder match between Christian and Del Rio, what else is on the card? Are you really going to spend $50 to see Jim Ross with a broken hand wrestling in a match? Are you really going to spend money to see Cena and Miz and Morrison? I mean, maybe you're more interested in Morrison than R-Truth, but I don't want to hear it. Nobody cares about Extreme Rules. If you do, you're lying, okay? Because there is absolutely nothing about that pay-per-view that makes me think, oh, I got to spend $50 on that show. But the UFC show is a different story, you know? It really, they did a tremendous job of hyping up their key fights. And really, this pay-per-view was all about two fights. It was about George St. Pierre, a native of I believe, Montreal, obviously from Canada. He was the hometown hero, not hometown, homeland hero, in there to defend his championship against Jake Shields, former champion from Strikeforce, who, of course, UFC purchased a couple of months ago. So I guess in some respects, it was almost like a dream match. You know, here's this UFC guy against a Strikeforce guy, although I think when people think of dream matches, I don't know that the name Jake Shields is normally in the discussion. But that was the main event. That was the money match on this show. People wanted to see St. Pierre beat the shit out of Jake Shields, and that did not happen. St. Pierre did win. He did retain his championship. It went the distance. Five rounds of very boring fighting. I don't understand what the strategy was on the part of either man. You had two fighters who, in the case of Jake Shields, the only chance he had of winning that fight was to take it to the ground. He's a very good submission specialist, I guess you would say. Certainly, standing and striking is not his forte. That much I know, and I'm not a Jake Shields expert, but I know that much. And he did nothing. I mean, he did absolutely nothing in this fight to even attempt to take St. Pierre down. And so he never really stood a chance. So I'm not quite sure what he expected, you know, going through each of these rounds. What was going through his mind? How did he expect to win this fight? And you would think, well, all right, if that's his strategy, at least St. Pierre will knock him on his ass. And that didn't happen either. It almost seemed like, I don't want to say St. Pierre was afraid of Jake Shields, but it was almost as though he was scared to go in there and finish the job. And the crowd was getting very restless. It was not a very exciting fight. And it's a shame, too, because the pay-per-view, I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I normally don't order UFC pay-per-views unless I really have a reason to, or if it's a Brock show. But, you know, this was a great show up until the main event. And then it kind of fell flat. What else did we have here? A couple of other comments here. UFC has this thing where they air their prelim fights on Facebook. If you go to the UFC page on Facebook and like their page, you have to like the page first. You then can, you know, there's a media player where you can play these prelim fights for free through Facebook. And I made a point. I'm pretty sure I made this point in, if you go back to episode 127 of the Sound Off, when I did that whole big business outlook on WWE and people I would bring into the company and things I would do to change the way that they operate. One of the things I harped on were pre and post shows for the pay-per-views, at least the bigger pay-per-views. And not so much, you know, in the case of wrestling, it wouldn't be prelims, it would be dark matches. I mean, my whole thought was, it doesn't even have to be matches. You can have a half an hour pre-show where there's just maybe a roundtable analysis of the key matches on the pay-per-view, interviews with the superstars before the show, and of course you can air highlights of the key angles that have led up to each pay-per-view. They have their free-for-all show, but I would hardly call that a pre-show, and they certainly don't do anything to hype it up. So, you know, WWE can take a few lessons from UFC when it comes to stuff like this, because they do a very good job of it, and I very much enjoyed that. My favorite fight on this entire pay-per-view, which I was not expecting, I kind of figured it would be a good fight. I've seen Aldo fight before, but Jose Aldo and Mark Hamedic had just a phenomenal fight, highlighted by one of the most, I guess, grotesque things I've probably ever seen in a fight. Mark Hamedic had this lump, this hematoma, on his head. It literally looked like he had a second head. It was disgusting. I thought for sure that the doctor, when he came in to examine it, would stop the fight. And miraculously, he did not stop the fight. He allowed the fight to continue. The round ended. I believe it was then they were heading into the fifth and final round of the fight. The doctor came back in again. I thought, okay, this is it. Now he's going to stop the fight. And he didn't. He let them continue fighting, and which was pretty impressive. And again, it helped. I mean, when this fight was coming down to the wire, and Hamedic was the underdog coming into this fight, and he gets Aldo down on the ground, and he's pummeling him, and he's not doing a lot of damage, but he's got the champion down. Finally, for the first real time in this fight, and he's punishing him, and he has this humongous lump sticking out of his forehead. The place, 55,000 people going absolutely apeshit. You could not have scripted better drama in a fight than they had here in this match. Of course, Aldo ends up winning. Hamedic could not pull out the victory, but this was great stuff. I mean, this is pro wrestling type stuff here, when pro wrestling is done correctly. But that hematoma on his head was just vile. And I thought for sure it was going to burst. And if that thing burst, that would not have been a pretty sight. Let's just put it that way. The other big fight, aside from the main event with GSP, that I think was the key fight on this pay-per-view, was Randy the Natural Couture against Lyoto the Dragon Machida. Now, Couture had said before this fight that this would be it for him. This would be his last fight in UFC or anywhere. He's 47 going on 48 years old, and Captain America, as they call him, seemingly reaching the end of his rope. I know that Dana White, the president of UFC, did not buy that at all. He had been saying to fans as late as the day before the pay-per-view, when he was asked about it, that he did not expect this would be Couture's last fight. And I think that may be why they didn't go all out in promoting it like that. But now that the pay-per-view is over, I think it's quite obvious that was Randy Couture's last fight. He went in there against Machida. He didn't do shit. Let's be honest here. He didn't do shit in this fight. He looked old. He looked tired. He looked like he was just out of his league. And Machida hit him. Here's the thing about this fight. Machida hit Couture with a crane kick, a Karate Kid-like crane kick, a front face kick that knocked out one of Couture's teeth and just sent him down, crashing down to the mat at a heap. I mean, he just knocked the fuck out of this guy. And the thing about it is, I noticed when Machida was coming out with his entourage for the fight, he was flanked by somebody who looked familiar to me, and I couldn't quite tell who it was. And then I realized it was Steven Seagal. And apparently, Machida has given Steven Seagal credit for teaching him or showing him that kick. Steven Seagal apparently has gotten praise from at least one other fighter before for teaching them a similar kick that helped them win a fight. You know, Steven Seagal in his heyday was a master, I guess, of the martial arts. I'm not saying he wasn't. He's a little heavier now. I don't know how much of that he still does. But I just thought that was interesting that Steven Seagal would be coming down to the octagon with this guy and essentially taught him the move that he used to beat the legendary Hall of Famer Randy Couture. So, Couture, look, if you got to go out, if you can't go out with a victory, go out with a bang. That was one of the best knockouts I've ever seen. And it's a shame. It's a sad ending for a storied career. But I think Couture will be just fine. He's got a little bit of a movie career for himself. He was one of the guys in The Expendables. I believe they're bringing him back for part two of The Expendables with Stallone and Steve Austin and everybody else. And yes, there is talk of bringing Steve Austin back. If you saw the first Expendables movie without giving away any spoilers, I don't know how that's possible either, but that was the discussion. So anyway, that was just my thoughts on UFC 129. Overall, top to bottom, main event aside, a very enjoyable show. Their production is to, you know, in my opinion, not quite at the level of WWE's production, but they're getting better. The arena, you know, the Sky Dome looked tremendous. I mean, they invested a lot of money in it. Speakers all over the place. These giant HD video screens. They had a video cube above the octagon. It was just really, really cool stuff. It was set up in many ways similar to a WrestleMania, only it didn't have the big ramp. It was just a regular aisle that makes it look like you're walking through the crowd. But I like that. So thumbs up to UFC. A good show last night, even though it was a boring main event. And that leads into the draft. WWE held their annual draft, the 2011 draft, on Monday night, and a lot of people moved around from Raw to SmackDown, SmackDown to Raw, both in the televised draft and the subsequent supplemental draft, which took place on Tuesday on WWE.com. Now, a couple of observations about the draft. Anybody who's listened to this show for any length of time knows that, to me, the draft is pointless. It affects the wrestlers. It really does. Because, again, if you have friends, if you have travel partners on one brand, and you switch, it can affect your life. You know, you're going to be hanging with a different crew. You're going to have a different schedule than the other guys. So you're not going to be able to see those same people as often, except maybe at pay-per-view. So it affects the wrestlers. And there are certain guys, I mean, look, Rey Mysterio for the longest time has always been looked at as a SmackDown guy. You know, he had one brief run on Raw that didn't last very long, and he went back to SmackDown. So for years, Mysterio has been a SmackDown guy. Undertaker has been a SmackDown guy. John Cena has been a Raw guy. It is rare that Cena would show up on SmackDown. However, by and large, WWE does not give a shit about keeping the brands separate. To them, it doesn't matter. It's not a big deal. And as we get closer to WrestleMania, we see such a mixing of the two brands that it's almost like there is no separate brands. It's almost like one WWE brand. For all those weeks leading up to WrestleMania, we saw guys from Raw on SmackDown constantly, and vice versa. And it didn't stop at WrestleMania. It continued even after the pay-per-view. And every year, we hear the same bullshit from WWE. Well, you know, when the draft takes place, you know, we're going to keep the brand separate. We're going to be strict about it. It's bullshit. It never works. So to me, the whole point of a draft, you know, years ago, perhaps, you can argue that it was important, that it meant something in the early days. It doesn't mean anything now. It's just, and the way that they handle it, I mean, here's the thing. You've got a general manager for each show, right? You've got a computer on Raw. You've got Teddy Long on SmackDown. Now, what is the point of having a general manager if they can't draft stars for their brand? It's not really a draft, it's a lottery. I mean, this is the way it was done in the first place. Remember the first drafts? You had Eric Bischoff coming up to the podium, announcing who he was picking. Vince McMahon would come up. Ric Flair, when he was the GM, he had a draft pick. That's the way that it used to work. That's the way that it should be. Otherwise, I don't really see the point of even having GMs in the first place if they can't pick people for each of their shows. So I think that's stupid. Looking at the rosters and how they shake up now, it's pretty obvious to me that Christian is not a lock, but Christian has to be the favorite to win the world title tonight at the Extreme Rules pay-per-view. I would not put it past WWE to figure out a way to fuck him over and have Del Rio win the belt anyway. And then maybe Christian can get it at some later date. But, you know, you look at the rosters now and who moved, and really there doesn't seem to be any other outcome to that ladder match that makes sense except Christian winning the title, therefore keeping that belt on SmackDown. So, you know, it's a shitty way. I mean, Christian is talented enough where I think he at least deserves a chance to run with the belt. And he may get that chance now, but if he gets that chance, he got his chance out of luck. And I think that sucks because I think he's better than that. I don't know that Christian is world title material in WWE. You know, maybe he isn't. I mean, I certainly think Christian is a very talented performer. He's got charisma. In my opinion, he's a great babyface, but he's much better as a heel. At least he was years ago. Now he's older, I don't know. But I don't look at him the same way as I look at John Cena or The Rock or Steve Austin or Triple H or Foley or any of those guys. I'm not even saying Christian is quite at that level. But he deserves a shot. You know, when a guy like Jack Swagger has a chance to run with the title, or The Miz, Christian deserves a shot. Hopefully he'll get his opportunity tonight at the pay-per-view, and we'll see what happens. But the other thing, it was interesting they would split up The Big Show and Kane, even though they are the tag team champions. I guess it doesn't matter since they can appear on both brands anyway. So, but to me, it kind of made me scratch my head a little bit. And I wanted to comment on the Mark Henry video. For those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, Mark Henry is one of the stars who got swapped on Monday night. He is moving from the Raw brand to the SmackDown brand. And obviously, Mark Henry is a guy, he has been with WWE since 1996. Think about that. Mark Henry is one of the most tenured stars on the roster. In fact, he may be the second or third. I guess he would be the third. Undertaker would probably be number one now that Shawn Michaels is retired. Triple H, I'm guessing, would be number two. Mark Henry may well be number three unless you want to count Jerry Lawler, but I look at him still more as an announcer than anything else. You know, for years they had guys like Bob Holly on the roster and Billy Gunn, and they had been there since probably 95, but they're gone now. So Mark Henry is way up there on the chart. And you know, he's had these start and stop pushes over the years where he'll be a mid-card guy, he'll be a job guy, and then all of a sudden they'll get a bug up their ass and they'll say, well, we should push this guy. Let's push him as a heel monster. And he'll get a push. I think he was ECW champion at one point. I vividly remember one of the worst WWE pay-per-view main events I've ever seen at the Royal Rumble in 2006, him versus Kurt Angle. They put that match on last because I guess Undertaker was making a big comeback that night and you know, they wanted to save that for the end of the show, but that was a mistake because that main event was fucking terrible. So Mark Henry, of course, then he became a babyface. He's the big smiling Kool-Aid man who comes out every week with a big smile on his face, and now he's turned heel again. You know, he was part of the main event on Raw, six-man tag main event. He turned on his tag team partners, and he walked out on them. After the show, WWE.com posted a video that they had recorded during Raw, after Henry was drafted, but before he did the heel turn. And he was interviewed backstage. It's about a 2.5-minute video. And if you haven't seen it, it's worth going out of your way to watch. It's not a scripted, you know, worked interview. I don't even know the person interviewing him. Somebody just stuck a mic in his face. They asked him a couple of questions. And, you know, obviously he apparently has lost some weight. And when he was asked about the weight loss, he got very emotional. You know, he didn't speak for a while. He was very quiet, and then you could see maybe he was getting very emotional. And then he started crying. Tears were running down his face, and he talked about how at one point he was tipping the scales at 4:30 maybe or something like that, and now he's down to 390. I mean, the only thing I could guess is maybe he had some sort of, you know, health scare, you know, because he's always been a heavy guy. You know, it's not like I've noticed in recent months that Mark Henry has ballooned to 500 pounds or anything like that. It's not like when Yokozuna came into WWF at 505, went up to 550, and eventually, literally, this wasn't even a work number. He went up to 660 pounds. So you look at Yokozuna in those later years in the WWF compared to when he first came into the company. You know, he was a heavy guy when he came in, but he was gargantuan towards the end to the point where I'm sure his health was in jeopardy. And a couple of years later, he lost his life. I haven't noticed any sort of dramatic weight increase with Mark Henry. He's always kind of looked the same to me, but, you know, he got very emotional for whatever reason, talked about the weight loss, talked about how, you know, he looks at this switch to the SmackDown brand as a positive. He honestly, in his heart of hearts, believes that there's nobody better than him. He wants to have a run with the championship. He wants to prove himself. And, you know, you watch that video, and it makes you root for the guy. I actually watched that video. I felt sorry for him. And I actually thought to myself, you know what? Give this guy a run with the title. Give him a shot. Now, I look back on that a week later, and I'm not so sure that I would go in that direction. But you know what? Sure, give the guy a chance. Mark Henry, for the longest time, was injury prone. He'd come back, he'd get hurt, he'd come back, he'd get hurt. He's been able to stay healthy now for a while. And, you know, God knows that their rosters are as thin now on talent as they've ever been. And Henry's not getting any younger. He's if he's not 40, he's getting pretty close to 40 years old. You don't know how much time a big guy like that has left. Or I don't even know how much time he has left on his contract, if he would re-sign or if they would even renew his contract. But it was a very, you know, the other thing that struck me watching that video was it makes me so goddamn angry when I see Mark Henry, of all people, who's never been known as a great promo guy. And I don't look at this as a promo. This was simply an interview that was done. They were asking him real questions. He was giving real answers. But you watch something like that and you realize how much better the interviews on television would be if they didn't script every fucking thing out the way they do now. If they just let these guys be a little bit more like themselves. I know, you know, even if you have a gimmick, that's cool. You know, you can play the gimmick, you can play the character on TV, but not script every single word out for these guys and make them say stupid buzzwords that never in a million years would you actually hear them say in a real conversation. I watched this 2.5-minute Mark Henry interview and I was blown away. So it's not that guys on the roster don't have the ability to get themselves over with their mouths. It's that they don't have that opportunity, and I think that sucks. And I really think that that's, you know, a perfect example of why that policy needs to change. It doesn't even have to change overnight. It could be a slow, gradual thing where little by little you let these guys promo here or promo there. Let them go out there, give them some bullet points, and see what they have. Some guys probably can't cut a promo for their lives. John Morrison cannot cut a scripted promo for his fucking life. But if John Morrison went out there without having to memorize his lines, John Morrison may turn out to be the best promo guy in the company. I don't know. It's just a matter of taking the handcuffs off these guys and giving them a chance to go out there and show their stuff. WWE is in deep shit right now. You know, Triple H is not a full-time wrestler anymore. Undertaker is on his last legs. The Rock is not a full-time wrestler. John Cena, you have Randy Orton. Edge is gone. You have Chris Jericho, who's still gone. Batista, who's still gone. You know, JBL. Look at the last couple of years. Look at all the main event guys they've lost, and look at all the new main event guys they've made. For all intents and purposes, they've only made two new main eventers. The Miz and Alberto Del Rio. And some people don't even buy Del Rio yet as being a main eventer. But to me, he's a main event guy. Two people. That's it. So they're in deep trouble if they don't do a better job of trying to get some of these guys over. You know, R-Truth just had that big heel turn and blew me away with his promo work on Monday night. A guy that I had absolutely no interest in seeing on my television as a babyface is now a heel, comes out, and does some of the best promo work on the entire TV show. So if they can keep this going, I could see a guy like R-Truth maybe not being a main eventer per se, but, you know, inching up more in that direction. As far as who else you push, just it's a matter of giving different guys opportunities. You know, Sheamus was a main event guy at one point. They did a very good job with him to where I looked at Sheamus as being a main event guy. And now I don't look at Sheamus as a main event guy. I don't look at Wade Barrett as a main event guy. They could get back there at some point, but they're mid-card guys at best right now. So they got to get their head out of their ass and give these guys a chance to get over. And you know what? I don't trust that their writing team is going to be able to do that. So let these guys talk. Maybe you strike gold, even one guy. If one guy gets over, like Austin did at the King of the Ring that year when he did the Austin 316 promo, if even one guy catches fire, you know, that could be the guy that takes you, you know, for the next 5 or 10 years. But you're never going to find that guy if you don't give them the opportunity in the first place. Let's run through the draft picks first, and then I'll give my thoughts on Raw. We had John Cena drafted to SmackDown, Rey Mysterio drafted to Raw, Randy Orton drafted to SmackDown, Mark Henry to SmackDown, Sin Cara to SmackDown, Big Show to Raw, Alberto Del Rio to Raw, and of course John Cena back to Raw. I'll get to that in a minute. Supplemental draft picks from Tuesday, we had Daniel Bryan going to SmackDown, which I think is a fantastic move for Bryan. I mean, he was going nowhere fast on Raw. And at least on SmackDown, he'll have an opportunity to be a much bigger star than he ever was going to be on Monday nights. Jack Swagger moves to Raw. Seems to make sense. I mean, Michael Cole, I guess, is on both shows. But, you know, Swagger to Raw. In a way, it kind of, it's almost a wash, I guess, because I don't know that he's going to be pushed any harder on Raw than he has been the last couple of weeks. But change of scenery might do him some good. Great Khali and Ranjan Singh to SmackDown means nothing. Jimmy and Jey Uso both moved to SmackDown. They don't have a tag division, so that doesn't mean anything. Kelly Kelly moves to Raw. JTG moves to Raw. I guess they need some new job guys. Alicia Fox moves to SmackDown. William Regal to SmackDown. He's not even wrestling anymore. Drew McIntyre moves to Raw. Could be a good move for Drew. He was just kind of stagnant on SmackDown. He had a big push going for a while, and then it just kind of died a death. And they haven't done anything with him, so on Raw, he's either going to drown and not get any TV time, or maybe he'll get something of a push as a number two or three heel. Yoshi Tatsu moves to SmackDown. There's a guy that deserves a better push than he has. Natalya moves to SmackDown. Kurt Hawkins moves to Raw. Chris Masters moves to Raw as well. Let's see. Kofi Kingston moves to Raw. That's kind of a wash, I think. You know, Kofi came from Raw at one point, moved to SmackDown. Intercontinental Champion. I've heard that they could potentially add one more match to the pay-per-view tonight that involves Kofi maybe winning, you know, the Intercontinental or U.S. title and bringing it back to the Raw brand since both secondary belts are on SmackDown. I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but that's kind of the same position Kofi's been in and probably going to be in for the foreseeable future. Ted DiBiase moves to SmackDown. Nobody cares. Tyson Kidd moves to SmackDown. Tamina moves to SmackDown, so I guess that ends the romance with her and Santino. Tyler Rex moves to Raw, or as I call him, Rob Zombie. Alex Riley moves to SmackDown, which has got to suck for Alex Riley. You know, he's been basically, he's been in the main events, you know, and in main event programs as part of Miz's package. Could you call it that? The Miz package. He has the championship. He has Alex Riley in his corner, who still carries around the briefcase. And you know, Alex Riley on his own on SmackDown, let's be honest, is he going to be pushed? Is anything close to a main eventer? Of course not. Beth Phoenix moves to Raw, and Sheamus moves to SmackDown. So, let's take a look here. Now, you know, when a sports writer in a newspaper, and sports writers, of course, they love to talk a lot of shit. They love to give their opinion, as well they should. If you have an opinion column, that's the whole point. You give your opinion, just like I give my opinion on this show. And I'm not always right myself. But the thing with sports writers is that they never bother to look back. If they make a prediction about something, it's kind of like a weatherman, too. You know, they could predict that it's going to rain. Ooh, it's going to rain the next 2 days. And then if it doesn't rain, nobody holds them responsible for that. You know, and it's the same thing with sports writers in that they can make these outrageous predictions and these outrageous statements about things. And if they come to pass, more often than not, if they don't come to pass, they never reflect back. You know, they never go saying, oh, well, you know, a week ago or a month ago I said this and this didn't happen or this did happen or whatever. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to do the opposite of that. I'm going to go back and I'm going to review my picks from last week on this show. I made my own predictions for the draft. I didn't, you know, do 20 of them. I did a couple for each brand. And we'll see how I did here. From the looks of it, I did pretty damn good, which I'm actually very happy. I've got a pretty good batting average this year with these predictions for the draft. That means nothing. From Raw to SmackDown, if you recall, the five people I picked to move excuse me, were in the order of significance: Randy Orton, Sin Cara, Daniel Bryan, Skip Sheffield, and Zack Ryder. Now, unfortunately, Zack Ryder did not move. And in fact, my biggest fear is the only place he may move in the near future is the unemployment line, but hopefully that doesn't happen. Skip Sheffield is still, I guess, down in FCW. He's waiting to come back. We haven't heard much from him. I would assume by now his ankle injury is all healed, but no mention of Skip Sheffield. However, my three top picks did come to pass. Randy Orton did move to SmackDown. You didn't need to be a rocket scientist to figure that was going to happen. But Sin Cara moving to SmackDown, that was one of my predictions. Sin Cara, I think, you don't want to have him and Mysterio on the same brand yet. You can build to something down the road. I didn't know they were going to swap Mysterio, but I thought for sure that they could and should switch Sin Cara. He's been a little rough around the edges in some of his matches also, so being on the tape show certainly can't hurt. But Daniel Bryan, the other pick, I said desperately needs to move brands. Thankfully, he did in the supplemental draft. So my three top Raw to SmackDown picks came to pass. Now, my SmackDown picks were Big Show moving to Raw, Drew McIntyre moving to Raw, and Lay Cool moving to Raw. And I was right pretty much on all of them. Big Show is, in fact, now a Raw star. Drew McIntyre is now a Raw superstar. And here's the thing about Lay Cool. I'm going to take credit for this, even though it's not going to happen. But Lay Cool is having a match at Extreme Rules. They have broken up. They've had a nasty divorce. And they're going to go one-on-one at the pay-per-view tonight. And the plan was that the two of them would have a match in which the loser of that match must leave SmackDown and presumably then would move over to the Raw brand. That was the plan up until a couple of days ago. Now, whichever member of Lay Cool it was, whether it was Michelle or if it was Layla, one of them was going to move to Raw, which would have made my pick correct. And then we find out during the week that, in fact, Michelle McCool is leaving WWE as an active in-ring performer. And so what WWE went ahead and did on Friday night was they made one of the most obvious, hilarious, and at the same time awful edits to a TV show that I've ever seen. And I know you know what I'm talking about because a lot of you pointed it out to me in the first place. They had a pull-apart brawl on SmackDown. Layla challenged her to a match. Michelle accepted. Michelle took the microphone, and she wanted to up the ante. And this was the part of the taping on Tuesday when Michelle announced that she wanted it to be Loser Leaves SmackDown. That's what she said. Loser Leaves SmackDown. Of course, that's not what we saw on Friday night. If you watched the TV show, at least here in the U.S., I don't know if they were able to get the edit in earlier for the countries where SmackDown airs before it does here in the U.S. But at the point where Michelle was going to say the word SmackDown, they inserted an edit where they showed Layla in the aisleway. And in the background, you heard Michelle say the letters WWE. But it was her voice. But it was such, the voice and the tone was so different than the promo that she was cutting. She was, you know, shouting almost on the microphone. And in this little edit here, she's so subdued. Even though most people would probably never know when WWE makes edits like this, it's sometimes hard to tell. Everybody knew that there was an edit made at that point. So something changed. She's not going to wrestle anymore. She's not going to technically be in the company as a performer anymore. She's leaving. I don't know if it's because she's going to spend more time with The Undertaker. I don't know if there was some sort of split between them and she is feeling the unfortunate end of that. I don't think that's the case. But nonetheless, one of these women was supposed to move to Raw. And plans changed, and that's not going to happen now, which technically makes my pick incorrect, but I'm going to go ahead and say that I scored 3-for-3 in my SmackDown to Raw picks. That's my story. I'm sticking to it. So there you go. Now, speaking of these shows, let's talk about... Well, actually, you know what? Let's talk two things before we talk about Raw real quick here. Dancing with the Stars, Chris Jericho, he made it 6 weeks in. You got to give the guy credit. Eliminated from the show on Monday night, did not collect enough votes to survive. He is cut. It's embarrassing in a way just because Kirstie Alley and the Karate Kid beat him in the competition. They're still in it and he's not. But he had a hell of a run. And you know what? He really represented himself as a wrestler. Because they did. They referred to him as a WWE wrestler. When Jericho would talk, he mentioned the initials WWE. He didn't shy away from it or run away from it. He had a very good showing for himself. And I think, and it's sad that I even have to say this in 2011, but there are still plenty of people out there who the only thing they think of when they think professional wrestling are a bunch of either Neanderthals who are dumber than a box of rocks, beating each other up in the ring, and they probably still think it's real, let's be honest. These are the people that even in 2011, if they're having a conversation or a debate with you about pro wrestling, and they hate wrestling and they don't like it, at some point they'll stick the question in there. It is fake, right? Or if they don't ask you the question directly, you know they're dying to know the answer because they'll say something to the effect of, well, you know, it is fake, isn't it? I love it when people do that. It amazes me. So they have that viewpoint of what wrestlers are, or they think they're just a bunch of big gay guys who oil themselves up and roll around in spandex, which is mostly true. That aside, Jericho comes off, he's a very articulate guy, he's a very smart guy, and he's a modern-day Renaissance man. And what I mean by that is he does a million different things. He wrestles, he sings, now he dances, he writes books. There is no limit to what this man cannot do. He acts, he's been in a couple of movies. New York Times best-selling author. So if I had to pick a representative, a top upper echelon star from WWE to go on that show or a show like it and represent the company, Jericho would be the guy. I mean, Jericho would be the guy to do that. So, you know, my kudos to him. And, of course, all the wrestling fans now, well, you know, he's off Dancing with the Stars, so maybe he'll be at Extreme Rules this Sunday. You know, I'll saw off my left nut if Jericho shows up at the pay-per-view tonight, okay? It's not going to happen. I would not say that if I was not confident that that would not happen. He's not going to be at the pay-per-view tonight. You know what? I wouldn't say that he won't be on Raw Monday for The Rock's birthday celebration. I don't think he will. If he was, it would probably be a cameo, so that's, you know, I won't say anything about my right nut when it comes to Raw Monday night, but I don't see Jericho coming back for a couple more months. You know, he's got a lot of touring left to do with Fozzy. They've got a whole bunch of European dates coming up this summer. It takes up a lot of time. That's his priority right now. Why would he come back to WWE and then vanish for another month to go touring with his rock band? It doesn't make any sense. I see him coming back before the end of the year, but I don't see it happening before the end of the summer. I could be wrong about that, but to me it just wouldn't make sense for him to rush back. What's he rushing back into? I mean, Lord knows the company could use him right now. They've lost a lot of top guys. Jericho would be a shot in the arm that they need. What brand do you put him on? Who does he feud with? What is he really contributing right now? And quite frankly, Jericho has said before that when he comes back, ultimately, he's not going to come back as the same personality that he had before. You know, Jericho used to be the guy with the long hair, the fan favorite, who would come out and cut jokes and all that crap. And then he turned serious. You know, he started coming out wearing Armani suits, not, you know, pandering to the audience. Very serious, very twisted. And he has said that he wants to reinvent himself every time he comes back. So when Jericho comes back, he's not coming back as the same serious guy in a suit and tie. He's going to want to be something different. Maybe that just means he's going to come back as a babyface. In fact, I expect him to come back as a babyface, even if he just turns back heel a couple weeks later. But I don't know that he has figured out what that plan of action is. I don't know that he's figured out how and, you know, what he wants to come back as. So I would not get my hopes up on Jericho showing up anytime soon. Now, as far as Tough Enough is concerned, the other show, there's a million things airing on Monday nights, and now that Jericho's off Dancing with the Stars, we can scratch that off the list. I know many of you probably never even bothered with it in the first place, but I enjoyed his segments. I did pay attention to that. And now that that's over with, we have Tough Enough, which is getting even better. I've been a big fan of Tough Enough from the first episode, but it looks like this episode coming up is a really good one. On this show, Rima, Miss USA, finally eliminated. It was a joke, of course, that she wasn't eliminated before this. In fact, it's a joke that she wasn't eliminated on the first show when they proved that she was cheating and she stuffed a pad in her side or to cushion her ass or something when they were doing those exercises where they were running the ropes for 3 minutes straight. But yeah, so she was dumped. Clearly on this show, Luke and Martin, who definitely is a dead ringer, by the way, for Donny Osmond. When Bill DeMott gave him the Donny Osmond nickname, he wasn't doing it to be mean. He was doing it because the kid looks like Donny Osmond. It's almost scary. The two of them are clearly the front runners in this competition. Luke, in my opinion, it's his to lose. You know, Luke, you may have heard rumors before Tough Enough started airing that Steve Austin had taken a liking to one of the performers and that he had even started training and going to the gym with this person, and nobody knew who that person was. I'm 99% sure that guy had to be Luke. And I'm not saying the fix is in. I'm just saying it's his competition to lose at this point. You know, the one thing that you may say is a strike against him, I'm not so sure it's a strike against him, is that he has a huge ego. To me, I'm sure he has an ego. You have to have an ego to be in this sort of business or to be in sports, to be in entertainment. But part of me wonders if he's not just playing it up because he knows the game. You know, I think he's probably one of the guys that was doing independent wrestling before he got recruited to be on Tough Enough. He knows how this works, and he knows he's on television, and he knows how important this is. So I'm sure he's probably a douchebag in real life, but the douchebag we see on Tough Enough is probably Luke with the volume amped all the way up. I'm sure he's just milking it because he knows he's on TV. And it rubs a lot of people the wrong way, but like I said, I think it's his to lose. He's the one guy out of this whole competition that I could see going straight from Tough Enough to the main roster and not having all that much of an issue adjusting to being on WWE television. I've really warmed up. The thing I realized watching this show, I've really warmed up to Bill DeMott. He's a likable guy for being such a prick. And that comes across on this show. Steve Austin is by far still the biggest star on the entire show, but Bill DeMott is right behind him. You know, the next episode, I wanted to make a comment here about Booker T. The next episode, it looks like Booker T gets a little hot under the collar. He, you know, they show him in the previews grabbing Ryan and picking him up violently off the ground as though Ryan must have said something to disrespect him or piss him off. And my question about Booker T is this: why even have him as a trainer on this show if he misses half the shows? I mean, has he been on more than two episodes of this show up to this point? It seems like he's always missing it for SmackDown, which is fine, but if he's going to miss all those shows, then why wouldn't you have gotten someone else for the role? That's one of those things I don't understand. Special guest this week on the show was Bret Hart. He claimed on his Twitter page, Bret did, that they edited out most of his speech to the trainees. And I really wish they would let these guys at least stick around to help critique some of the drills. I know you have to edit it down for television. I'm sure these guys are not showing up for 10 minutes and leaving. They're probably spending the day, and they're only cherry-picking what they show on television. But why couldn't you show, for example, Bret Hart sticking around at ringside when they did the bumps and they did, you know, their spots and maybe, you know, critique them a little bit or give them some advice instead of just coming into the ring, talking to them, and then going back into the Tough Enough office? That kind of seems pointless to me. Rey Mysterio's on the show next week. And, Tough Enough, still the best show on Monday nights. Thoroughly enjoying it, even more so than Raw. And the absolute best thing on Monday night didn't even air on television. It was a Tough Enough bonus video that Steve Austin recorded and posted on his Twitter page. And, basically, Steve Austin rickrolled all of us on Monday night. He recorded this video where he was lip-syncing to Never Gonna Give You Up by Rick Astley. And if you've never lived to see Steve Austin lip-sync Never Gonna Give You Up while wearing sunglasses, no less, you must see this video. You must drop everything you're doing right now and go watch this video. It was phenomenal. It was easily the highlight of anything that aired on television on Monday night, and it didn't even air on TV. One other comment here. By the way, you can check out the deleted scenes on the Tough Enough website. And I mention this because there's some great clips on there that a lot of people probably aren't even aware of, including Steve Austin and Bret Hart clip. Steve Austin is driving his golf cart seemingly up the side of a mountain. Maybe they're driving back to the Tough Enough complex. I don't know. But Bret Hart is sitting in the passenger seat right next to him, and they have a camera on the, the dashboard. Does it even have a dashboard? Filming these two guys as Austin is driving, and they're basically just shooting the breeze. And they're talking about whether or not they missed being in the ring. And it's just really good stuff. It's like a 2-minute clip. They have a clip of John Cena and Steve Austin having dinner at the house with all of the Tough Enough crew. Steve Austin cooks up some steaks. It's this long table. They're all seated at the table. Cena's on one end. Austin's on the other. And Cena starts stirring up some shit during the segment. Again, it's interesting to watch. Big Show and Steve Austin, they have a clip from when Big Show was on the show of him and Austin sharing a beer and having an archery contest. So there you go. As if the Big Show is not big and terrifying enough by himself, just imagine the Big Show with a bow and arrow in his hands. Frightening. Anyway, check it out. It's really cool stuff. You can get it on the website. If you have the Tough Enough app on your iPhone, as I do, you can access most, not all, I think, but some of those deleted scenes are in the video section in the app. Definitely worth the time to check them out. All right, so let's talk Raw from Monday night, this show. What can I say about this show that was good? It had a lot of matches, which is great, except that none of them went longer than a few minutes, save for the Battle Royal that opened the show, nor were any of the matches particularly good. So, you know, the point is, you can have a million matches on a show, but if you're just rushing to get through them, then what's the point? I mean, I'd rather have a show with only 2 or 3 matches. If those matches blow me away and all the other stuff is good, that's a good TV show right there. So I just thought that this was not the best Raw I've ever seen. It wasn't the worst, but it was not the best show. I've seen a lot better than this. Raw started with perhaps the most boring Battle Royal I have ever seen. I will say that Kofi Kingston and Evan Bourne, they did some spots at the end of the Battle Royal out on the apron that I thought were really, really cool. Big Show and Kofi win, and I have to say that Big Show, seriously, honestly, no joke, he looked like he was about to collapse and die at the end of this Battle Royal. I was so worried about the poor guy. He was sweating bullets. He just looked like he was going to drop dead. That's how gassed he was. I have a question. Perhaps somebody listening can answer it for me. Why the fuck was Mason Ryan out there at the end? He is so terrible. He's clumsy. He looks extremely phony when he's in the ring, when he's moving around in there. I mean, it doesn't matter if he's on offense, if he's trying to sell, it's even worse. I can't even blame the guy because it's not his fault that they called him up. But again, when he was in developmental, he was and may still be even the FCW champion. They gave him the belt almost instantly when they brought him into that promotion. And I may or may not have mentioned it on the show that at the time, Mason Ryan, his real name Barry Griffiths, was you know, asking people in the locker room, why are they doing this? Like, why do I have the belt? He was almost embarrassed to have it because he admitted he's not ready. He's too green. So the guy understands that, but he's a big jacked up guy that looks like Batista. So that's why he's on television getting the push that he's getting. But he looks so fucking awful in that match, and there's no saving the guy. You know, unless the guy goes back down, spends some time down there, and works with people who can show him the ropes, he's not going to get any better. It's just not going to happen. John Cena was acting even goofier than usual after he was drafted. It was insufferable. But looking back, you know, that really should have been a tip-off of what was to come. I mean, Cena always acts goofy in his promos, but this was above and beyond anything, even by the usual Cena standards. And at this point, I wasn't thinking along the lines of him getting drafted back at the end of the show, but I should have been. This should have been a tip-off. R-Truth's little Johnny promo was fantastic stuff. It looked like he may have been a little bit flustered by the annoying what chants, which are the bane of my existence. But you know what? It's his own damn fault, and I'll tell you why. And this goes for any wrestler who does this. When you speak in sentence fragments, okay, you're going to get whatted to death. That's just a fact of life. If you give people an opportunity to interject and to say what, they will do it because they are fools. It's just that simple. Don't talk in sentence fragments. I'm not saying that you have to keep talking without taking a breath. Chris Jericho is the master of it. You know, Jericho, much like all the other guys for years, was tormented by what chants. He was not excused from it. But when Jericho tweaked his character and would come out in the suit and tie and cut those dark promos. He wasn't shouting into the microphone. He was talking very low, which is an old trick that Jake Roberts used to do, because by speaking low, you're forcing people to pay attention to what you're saying. Jericho found a way to cut promos in the middle of the ring and not allow people the opportunity to say what. So that's what these guys need to be taught, because R-Truth was talking in sentence fragments, and he was just inviting them to do that, and when they did it, it didn't seem to me like he was expecting it or he wanted that reaction. It seemed like he was getting agitated by it, and I just couldn't help but think, you did it to yourself. But it was still a damn good promo. I was very surprised that he used the words pissed off multiple times, and apparently it was bleeped. I don't remember it being... Well, actually, you know what? They did try to bleep it on TV on USA. I do wonder if that was off the cuff or not, since they did try bleeping it. I certainly hope he didn't get punished for it. I didn't hear anything to that effect, but it was a great, great promo. On the other hand, and I know this seems like I'm beating up on poor John Morrison, and I am, Morrison's beatdown of R-Truth at the end of that promo looked weak as hell. I mean, it was almost like he was giving him love taps. You know, if somebody beat the shit out of me one week and blew cigarette smoke all over me and just basically embarrassed me in front of the world on TV, and this was a person who I considered a partner, a friend of mine, and this guy comes out the next week and he's out there, you know, sashaying around, talking all this crap. You know, if I attacked this guy from behind, and I'm not so sure I would jump him from behind either, by the way. That's a hell of a babyface move, but... You know, if I jumped this guy to beat him up, I'd beat the shit out of him. I mean, I would beat the fuck out of this guy. And John Morrison just looked like he was, you know, doing a bunch of moves and going through the motions. And he just, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'm the only one who noticed that. Awesome Kong is, in fact, coming in as Karma. So that was confirmed on Monday night. And for the record, her latest promo was tremendous. It was tremendous and it was creepy. I mean, the way that they finally panned up to show her face, and she's cackling, she's laughing her ass off, and there's this creepy music in the background that it just reaches this crescendo, and then it just stops, and then they show the name Karma on the screen. Really, really well done stuff. I don't know what they're going to do with her when they bring her in, if they're going to feud her with Gail Kim and rekindle some of the magic that they had in TNA. I'm not even sure that the guys who write for WWE or Vince McMahon are even aware that Awesome Kong feuded with Gail Kim in TNA, so it may not matter. But this was really good. What was not good, speaking of the women, was Eve and Layla had a match. There were more botched spots. It's pretty much par for the course here. It was every Divas match that you've ever seen on Raw. It went about a minute. Michael Cole interrupted at the end again, I guess just to reinforce what we already know, which is that this division means less than nothing. Now, and by the way, I want to make a point here about something, now that I mentioned this, and I was just talking about Tough Enough. You know, after watching how horrible the women on Tough Enough are, and how the trainers lace into them for not knowing what the hell they're doing, I guarantee you that if you took all of the WWE Divas on the main roster, and you put them on Tough Enough, they would all get cut. Every single one of them would get cut. So when I see Trish Stratus on television, you know, bantering about how she had to pay her dues and take her lumps, which she did, and talking about what it takes to be a WWE diva, I can't take anything she says seriously. Because the women on that show could easily, I mean, any woman on that show could easily be swapped out for any current diva, and it really wouldn't make all that much of a difference. Interesting that the U.S. and Intercontinental Champions each lost clean as a sheet on this show. Wade Barrett and Sheamus both got beaten. We had Jim Ross against Michael Cole. You know, there was a time when this match could have been a really big match, like on pay-per-view. And people would have figured that the announcing job on Raw might be up for grabs, like as a stipulation in that match. But nope, this was done as a way to hype a tag team match on the pay-per-view that... You know, and unless Ross is working us, he got hurt again. This is not the first time that he's got hurt doing stuff on television in the last couple of weeks. You know, he hurt his ankle or his knee a couple of weeks ago, and he hurt his hand on Raw Monday night. And the best part of this, I will say, I will admit, was seeing Michael Cole get bloodied by Jim Ross, and then with blood smeared all around his mouth, begging off from Jerry Lawler in the corner. This was before Lawler whipped him. That was the best part of all of this. And again, seemingly every week when these guys are on TV, it's the highest rated segment on the show. So this was the high point of Raw from Monday night as far as ratings are concerned, which I'm not quite sure what that says, but there you go. So, yeah, that was pretty much it. You know, Ross was pounding the fuck out of Michael Cole, and apparently one of Michael Cole's teeth, I guess, went through JR's knuckle. And Cole was all, you know, his whole mouth was all busted up, and they didn't try hiding it. They didn't wipe it off or anything like that. You know, the payoff that we really didn't get at WrestleMania was Michael Cole getting a colossal ass-whipping. We didn't see it at WrestleMania. In fact, Cole ended up winning, technically. He won the match. And people have been dying to see Cole get his ass kicked, and we kind of saw it on Monday night, you know? Ross beat him up, Lawler whipped him with a leather strap. They're going to have a country whipping match at the pay-per-view, but, you know, to me as a viewer, I've already seen what I wanted to see. And now I just want this to be over with. I'm not going to pay $50 to see, a non-wrestler, an injured non-wrestler at that, team up with Jerry Lawler against Jack Swagger and Michael Cole. I mean, it's amazing what can happen in a month, because Cole versus Lawler was probably the match, the best hype match at WrestleMania that I was looking forward to the most. And now I just feel like this whole thing is just beating a dead horse. I just can't wait for this to be over. Randy Orton gets drafted to SmackDown, and all I can think is, why do John Cena, at this point of the show, when I didn't realize that Cena was going to be moved back, I just thought, why do Cena and Orton have to be on the same show? And does SmackDown have any heels at all? You know, and later on we did see a new SmackDown guy turn heel with Mark Henry. Anyway, fast forward to the end of the show. The only thing that really mattered, John Cena gets drafted back to Raw. And if you listen closely, the sound that you heard were the gods of the WWE Universe weeping in unison. There were a lot of very happy people, myself included, when Cena first got drafted to SmackDown. In fact, I posted on Twitter tears of joy. And by the end of the show, those tears of joy had turned to tears of something else. Tears of sorrow, I suppose. Cena is not, in fact, leaving Raw. He is very much a part of Raw going forward. And that left a really sour taste in a lot of people's mouths. And, you know, it kind of goes back to what I was saying before about UFC, in that there were a lot of people I know that really liked the show on Monday. And I think that's great. If you really like the show, more power to you. I thought it was a good show. I didn't think it was a great show. In fact, it bored me in a lot of parts. But if you were watching Raw thinking that it was a really good show, and you really were happy that John Cena had left Raw to go to SmackDown, and then you see at the end how they fucked you over, and they never actually moved him in the first place, all of a sudden the show is over, and you're probably thinking to yourself, man, that show sucked. Even though it really didn't suck, it was just the ending that sucked. It's kind of like the UFC pay-per-view last night, in that main event was horrible, but it was actually a pretty good show overall, so I thought that was kind of interesting. Anyway, we have Extreme Rules coming up tonight on pay-per-view. By the time many of you listen to this, the pay-per-view will probably already be over. And really, the only thing of any value, in my opinion, is the ladder match with Christian and Alberto Del Rio in what I believe might be Del Rio's first ever ladder match. I don't know if he ever had one in Mexico or not. And Christian, obviously, is a master, an innovator of the ladder match. And aside from that, Extreme Rules is a pretty goddamn crappy show on paper. And even Del Rio and Christian, let's be frank here, these two guys have had a lot of television matches for free over the last 2 months. I mean, they've had a lot of singles matches, and one of those matches was a steel cage match. Which is like Extreme Rules. I mean, Extreme Rules is all about stipulations. Instead of this being a cage match, they made it a ladder match. But we've already seen these guys so often that there's nothing on this show. There is not a single thing on this pay-per-view that could possibly make anybody want to spend $50 on it. It's inconceivable to me. I don't see it. I just don't see it. This pay-per-view is going to bomb. And as well it should. They have not put anything on paper for this show that is worthy of that kind of price tag. You know, if this were the days, if the days of $30 pay-per-view shows were still around, you know, maybe. Maybe you could justify it. But even then, I don't think you could, because this looks like a glorified edition of Raw. And I just don't see how it's worth it, but if you watch Extreme Rules, by all means, let me know what you think. If I'm wrong, you know, sometimes these shows that look crappy on paper and nobody buys turn out to be some of the best shows of the year. I thoroughly enjoyed Elimination Chamber in February, but on paper, you know, you knew you were going to get some really great stuff with those Elimination Chamber matches, and the SmackDown one in particular was, in my opinion, the match of the year, at least up until that point. So, you know, it's not like all their pay-per-views are not worth the money, but I'm not buying this one. I'm not, literally or figuratively, I'm not buying this one. And again, on those weekends, traditionally, when they run the same weekend as a UFC pay-per-view, WWE is the one that comes out the worst of the two. Survivor Series 2009 was a bad time for WWE. And in fact, you know, UFC, I think that was a Brock Lesnar show. And Survivor Series bombed. And you might say, well, who gives a shit about UFC? One doesn't have to do with the other. Well, in fact, it does. And that Survivor Series that did so poorly because of UFC, although I'm not saying the pay-per-view would have done fantastic business were it not for UFC, but it would have done better. But as bad as it did, that was the pay-per-view that convinced Vince McMahon temporarily before he was, talked out of it, I guess, to dump the Survivor Series name. I mean, that was the reason. In a way, you could almost say UFC almost killed Survivor Series. And then WrestleMania 26 last year, which had that, you know, great Undertaker Shawn Michaels match, Bret Hart versus Vince McMahon, didn't do very well either because it ran the same weekend as the UFC. So I think it's going to be a bad night for WWE. Rock is on Raw next week. That would be this Monday. That's going to be a good night for WWE. I think it will be. They're billing it as the biggest birthday party in the history of TV. And the only thing I could say is, I hope Rock does not invite Jake Roberts. Because the last party that he was invited to, well, let's just say his gift did not go over so well. The other big story of the week, CM Punk, rumored to possibly be leaving WWE. I've seen people who have been posting that Punk is leaving WWE. And that is not true. CM Punk, I'm not even sure CM Punk knows yet what he's going to do. Basically, the story is, I noticed the PW Insider, I think, was the first website, just to give them credit, that broke the news on Tuesday that CM Punk, whose current deal is set to expire in a couple of months, was offered a new long-term deal by WWE, and thus far he has refused to sign it. And he may be looking to exit the company now. Supposedly, he's burned out from being on the road for so many years. And more importantly, he's unhappy with his position in the company and the way that he has been used for the last year or so. And, you know, you have guys like Alberto Del Rio and The Miz who were pushed a lot higher lately than CM Punk. And all of that in totality has made him a very unhappy camper. And, you know, all I can say is that WWE has lost a lot of main event guys recently. And guys like Jericho may be back at some point, but they're still gone. They can ill afford to lose CM Punk. Ultimately, it's his decision. He's going to do what he wants to do. He doesn't have to sign a new deal if he doesn't want to. You know, maybe Vince McMahon can sit down with him and can convince him to stay. I probably don't see that happening. So I don't know what month Punk's contract expires. I would imagine they're going to let him, I would assume they're not going to let him out of his contract before it's due. So he's probably not going to go anywhere just yet. But when he leaves, you know, maybe a couple months away would do him some good. Maybe he wants to be gone for longer than that. You know, some of the rumors say that he's not leaving for 3 months. He wants to leave for like a year or more. He wants to recharge his batteries. He wants to just get away from it all. He's not looking to retire. He's not leaving wrestling for good. But let's be honest, where else is there for him to go? I mean, in terms of full-time employment, he'd be a fool to go to TNA. Ring of Honor, you know what? I could see CM Punk, if he's free and clear of any contractual obligations to WWE, I'll tell you what, I could see CM Punk going back to Ring of Honor, not necessarily as a permanent part of their roster, maybe for, you know, one time a surprise appearance or a couple of matches maybe. He can partner with his buddy Colt Cabana, because Punk has numerous times, I mean, even over WrestleMania weekend, I think, Punk has snuck into Ring of Honor shows. He has a lot of friends in the company. He's very friendly, in fact, with the people even who run the company. And, you know, that's really where he got his first big break on the independent scene. He became Ring of Honor champion. Then he got signed to a developmental deal. He was in TNA for a while, you know, back in the days of the, I guess, the Asylum in Nashville. But if he wants to make the kind of living that he's been making, and I know Punk is not a big spender and all that, but if he wants to make the kind of money he's been making, and if he's disappointed in his spot on the card and he wants more recognition, he wants a higher profile feud or what have you, WWE is really the only place for him to go. And if he leaves the company, I could easily see him go back to Ring of Honor for a couple of shots, and maybe 6 months or a year later, he's ready to come back, signs a new deal with WWE, maybe before next year's WrestleMania. But if he is looking to leave, it's going to be a big blow to the company. Punk has consistently been one of their better performers, and he can really deliver for you in a number of different ways. Let us not forget when Punk suffered that hip injury at Bragging Rights last year, and you know, he wrestled a little bit more, and then he was hurt and he couldn't wrestle. He was going to have surgery on his hip, which I don't know that he ever had. I think he may have actually rehabbed it instead of getting surgery, but whatever it was, he was going to be out of action for a while. And this was right after he got drafted to Raw. He was on SmackDown, remember, as part of the Straight Edge Society, and then he came out, his debut appearance on Raw, beat the shit out of Evan Bourne, who was leaving anyway to go have shoulder surgery, so he basically, quote, injured Evan Bourne. And it wasn't long after that Punk himself was gone, because he too was hurt. What they did was they moved him into the announce booth, and he proceeded to outshine everybody else. I mean, he was a revelation on commentary. And there was a lot of talk that, you know, when he's ready to hang up the boots, he could have a career and a future in announcing. I don't know if he would want to do that full time or not. So it's a shame that if he wants to stop wrestling, he won't at least consider announcing. I don't think he wants to do that right now anyway. But he's been such an MVP-like performer for them for so long. And think about it. You know, Punk came from being this, quote, indie geek that a lot of people had heat with, you know, supposedly when he was down in OVW. You know, he even rubbed Triple H and Shawn Michaels the wrong way at one point, and you know, almost from the beginning when he was brought up as part of the ECW roster, he was brought up to be a star. You know, he became the ECW champion, he got moved over to the main brands, and proceeded to win 3 world titles, an intercontinental title, and 2 Money in the Banks. You know, they made him the leader of 2 different factions. One on SmackDown, the other is, you know, the new Nexus on Raw, which went nowhere. So they clearly see him as a star. But if he leaves, man, it's these rosters are thin enough as it is, and that ain't going to be good news. You know, maybe Punk can use whatever leverage he has. If WWE can possibly convince him to stay, and he knows this, maybe he can convince them to give Colt Cabana a spot on the roster. Him and Colt are like this. I mean, they're best friends. Punk has even said before he doesn't understand how Colt Cabana doesn't have a job with a WWE or a TNA. he's certainly talented enough. And I don't understand it either, just because I know that he was in developmental and they moved him up and they made, you know, he was Scotty Goldman. He was basically a jobber on the main roster. And he may have had some issues with Dusty Rhodes down in developmental, if I remember correctly. And he had some harsh words to say about the company when he got cut. Having said all that, he is exactly the kind of performer that they're looking for. Colt did some announcing in FCW at the time, and much like Punk, blew everybody away. He was very good at announcing. His whole character, it's a comedy character with an edge to it. He's a very good wrestler. If you want him to wrestle, he can wrestle you. But he's also a very funny guy. And that's the sort of thing that WWE looks for. And I cannot understand for the life of me why they wouldn't want to give a guy like that a shot. And like I said, hey, if Punk wants to play the game, maybe he can play that aspect for leverage and say, hey, give my buddy a job and maybe I'll stick around. But I don't see him doing that. Speaking of main eventers that WWE has lost recently and probably would love to get back, Big Dave Batista was in the news on TMZ.com earlier this week. He told TMZ that his MMA deal with Strikeforce fell through when Strikeforce got gobbled up by UFC. And so he was very disappointed about that. Personally, you know, I question whether or not he was ever going to sign in the first place. It's kind of like Kurt Angle. When Kurt Angle said that he was going to get into MMA and he wanted to fight Randy Couture, and it was like, do you really want to commit suicide by doing that? I mean, you've had a broken neck for 14 years, among other issues, and you want to get into mixed martial arts at the age of 40? Are you mad? Of course, Kurt was just blowing smoke up people's asses. He never did it. I wonder if Batista ever really wanted to fight. I think Batista was more serious about it than Kurt Angle. I know Batista was. He was definitely training. And, you know, there's even video footage of him training. But he claims that when they gobbled up Strikeforce, that the deal died. So basically that opens the door for him to return to WWE if he wanted to. Now, I don't expect him back anytime soon. Do I think he will return? Hell yes, he's going to return. I mean, if you think he won't be back in WWE at some point, then you're a fool, because he will be. I guarantee it. He made a lot of good money in WWE. He can go back there anytime he wants to, and he knows that they would welcome him back with open arms. And he's not getting any younger. I mean, Big Dave is in his early to mid-40s, and he's a big guy who's had a lot of injuries and a lot of muscle tears, and he's not going to be wrestling or fighting or anything like that when he's 50. So he will be back in WWE. I just don't know that it's going to be this year necessarily. We have WrestleMania 27. The preliminary estimates on a buy rate for the pay-per-view, for those of you who are interested in that sort of thing, and the business end of things. WrestleMania did, it looks as though it broke 1 million buys on pay-per-view, which is exactly what WWE was looking for. So, you know, give all the credit to The Rock as far as I'm concerned. I don't know that anybody bought that pay-per-view because of Snooki. And as big of a star as Steve Austin is, Austin's star has faded in that he's been on a lot of WWE pay-per-views as a referee and different things like that over the years. And, you know, Austin in that respect has never really made any difference in the buy rate. But The Rock had been gone for 7 years. And they built up this feud with him and John Cena, and I think the question was, how many people are willing to spend money on WrestleMania when they otherwise would not, just to see The Rock host the show? Because, again, he was not wrestling John Cena. I wonder if a lot of people thought he was. A lot of people who were old wrestling fans, maybe, who heard about The Rock coming back, or casual fans who don't pay attention as much. I wonder if they watched those promos, and they really just assumed that Rock was fighting Cena. I'm sure that was part of it. But nonetheless, it looks like they hit 1 million buys, which WWE pay-per-views, let's just be frank, they don't hit 1 million buys on pay-per-view these days. And even at their peak, with a show like WrestleMania 17, even those shows, I think, I don't remember if it was just domestic or if it was international and domestic, but I think WrestleMania 17 did like 950,000 buys or something like that. So the fact that this did 1 million, it looks like it did over a little over 1 million, is really a testament to The Rock. And you have to give credit to one other guy as well, and that's Vince McMahon. You know, he really came through in the clutch. He desperately wanted Brock Lesnar for that pay-per-view. And to the point where Vince actually had a meeting with Dana White from UFC. And I don't know if they had lunch or what the nature of the meeting was, but, you know, Dana told him, just like he told everybody else, Brock is under an exclusive UFC contract. I would never allow him to do WrestleMania. And at that point, Vince was desperate. He knew WrestleMania needed some sort of special attraction. He worked out a deal for The Rock, who, again, had not really done much with the company in 7 years. And now this looks like it may turn out to be one of the most successful WrestleManias of the last 5 years. So kudos to them on that. Kurt Angle, back in the news again himself. He is he has a role, by the way, in a motion picture that is out called Dylan Dog. It's a real movie, not one of these independent straight-to-DVD films. It's called Dylan Dog, and apparently Kurt is in the movie as a werewolf. So if anybody sees that movie, let me know how Kurt is in that movie. I'd be very curious to know, but he was in the news for a different reason. And apparently Kurt Angle is claiming that he is going to try out for the Olympics again. That's what he said. This is a story. One of the Philadelphia news stations posted a story on their website. Kurt said that he and his nephew Mark have discussed the idea of making a run at the 2012 Summer Olympics in London. He said, "I feel really good at 42, and I might be making a statement that him and I are going to start training for the Olympics and go after the U.S. Open, the Olympic team trials, and then the Olympics." In 2002, you may remember, WWE gave Kurt permission to pursue a spot in the 2004 Olympics in Athens, and that never happened. And Kurt goes on to say in this article, if we're going to make this commitment, we're going to do it, and it starts in August. So that's the time frame we're looking at. Kurt Angle is not trying out for the Olympics. I believe that about as much as I believe that, that Donald Trump will announce that he's running for president. It's not going to happen. And he knows that, and every now and then we hear something outlandish from Kurt, and people buy into it. And I think people buy into it because they don't know how beat up he really is. I mean, you and I have heard stories. We know that his neck is all fucked up. I don't think his neck is the only thing, by the way, that's fucked up. Kurt's not going to the Olympics. And just the thought of that is and again, he is 42 years old. The thought of it is truly mind-boggling to me. But they did a news story. This was a local TV station that actually thought it was worth doing a news story on, and they pushed it like they thought that this guy was going to be, you know, this Olympic hero coming out of retirement to go for the Olympics again. And just, you know, it makes me shake my head. Wanted to mention this. This was a story that was posted by SE Scoops on Thursday. It concerns Karen Jarrett, the former Karen Angle, as being the subject of a sexual harassment suit against TNA. So apparently the Honky Tonk Man claimed on his weekly podcast on Monday, which you can listen to by going to htmradio.com, he claimed that Karen Jarrett is the alleged victim of a sexual harassment lawsuit filed against TNA Wrestling. He claims that Karen was sexually harassed by Dixie Carter's husband, Serge, and says that a settlement was reached and that part of the deal involved Karen being given her job back with TNA and put back on TV. He claims that Dixie was removed from television earlier this year because of that lawsuit. I have absolutely no idea if this is true or not, but this is what the Honky Tonk Man went public with. SE Scoops ran the story. Take from that what you will. Deadline.com posted a story during the week, a revealing article, listing compensation for some of the top executives in the media and entertainment world, and in particular, those whose income is not that far off from what other executives in the company make. So basically what that means is, in some companies, there are executives high in the pecking order who will make an obscene amount of money. And other executives in the same company will make a lot of money, but they'll make far less. So this was a list that basically showed executives who make a lot of money in these companies, but it's pretty much in line with what everybody else makes. And the reason I bring this up is that number three on this list is WWE's very own Kevin Dunn, who is the executive vice president for television production. And the blurb states that the company still does not appear to have a distributor for their WWE cable network that it's been talking about launching. And its stock price has plummeted 7.5%. And Kevin Dunn saw his salary decline almost 10% recently to a measly, paltry $1.8 million. How will this poor guy live off a measly $1.8 million? I don't know. Apparently, of that $1.8 million, about $750,000 is actual salary, $680,000 is stock awards, $350,000 is cash equity, and there's another $8,000 in miscellaneous compensation. So anyway, that what Kevin Dunn makes is only 1.5 times higher than the average for WWE's other executives. So I just thought it was interesting. We don't hear too much about Kevin Dunn, and he has a profound impact on what you see on WWE television, for better or worse. And I, you know, a lot of times I think it's for the worse. I mean, he has been part of that company from the beginning. I mean, he has been part of that company since at least the mid-'80s. And, you know, he is way up there in the pecking order. And the first time I ever saw Kevin Dunn was on the first season of Tough Enough. He was on the show, at least in one episode. It was a meeting in Vince McMahon's office where I think Vince and Jim Ross might have been there, and they were talking about some of the people on the show and what they think about them. And that was the first time I remember seeing Kevin Dunn. And not a particularly handsome fellow, but even on that show, he just rubbed me the wrong way. He just even in the second season of Tough Enough, when he's giving his opinions and his thoughts on some of the people who were trying out, ironically, one of those people was John Morrison, when John Morrison was on the second season of Tough Enough, and I remember the I watched this again recently. It was when Morrison had his tryout, and Kevin Dunn was on the panel along with Jim Ross and Ivory, former WWE diva, and they were watching this kid. And Morrison even then was very very agile, and he's very impressive. He's doing all these flips and all these moves, and you know, he was a gymnast. And Jim Ross, I remember Jim Ross asked John Morrison if he could do the spin-a-rooney. And John Morrison stands there, and into the mic he says, "What's the spin-a-rooney?" And Jim Ross says, "What, you don't watch WWE TV? You don't follow the product?" And all of a sudden, as Ross is saying this, Morrison drops the microphone and proceeds to do probably the best spin-a-rooney I've ever seen. He had like three or four different rotations before he landed back on his feet. And I remember they showed Kevin Dunn, who was completely nonplussed by the whole thing. And in fact, Dunn, as he said later on, was bothered by the guy's ego, basically. You know, Morrison obviously knew what the spin-a-rooney was, and he was just showing off. And this really pissed off Kevin Dunn. And Kevin Dunn basically said that he was not voting for him. He didn't think this guy belonged in WWE. And all these years later, obviously, John Morrison is working his way up the ladder to potential main event status in WWE. So, I don't know that Kevin Dunn is necessarily the best judge of character, but I've heard a lot of stories about him over the years that just piss me off. You know, when Jerry Lawler even went into the Hall of Fame in 2006, Jerry Lawler wanted Lance Russell to induct him into the Hall of Fame. And Lance Russell is known for being a famous wrestling announcer in Memphis. And Lance Russell was the person who actually gave Lawler his start. Lawler used to draw, he used to do drawings, because Lawler is a very, very good artist even today. And if I remember correctly, it was Lance Russell that Lawler would send these drawings to. He would mail them, and or he would drop them off at the TV studio, or whatever the story was. But Lance Russell was so impressed by this that ultimately he gave Lawler an opportunity to be involved in the business, and it just kind of went from there. And he's got to be in his 80s, I would imagine, by now, but he's still around. And Lawler really wanted him to do the induction. And it was Kevin Dunn, supposedly. It was Kevin Dunn who put the kibosh on that and said, "Nobody's going to know who he is. We need somebody that people will recognize." Now, is he wrong in saying that a majority of the WWE audience will not know who Lance Russell is? Of course not. Most people won't know who Lance Russell is. But that's not the fucking point. The point is, Lawler is being given the honor of being inducted into the Hall of Fame. This is a special night, a special occasion for him. And he wanted Lance Russell. Here's the man who gave him his big break in the business, and is a big name in wrestling, just not on a national scale. And Kevin Dunn, of all people, is the one to say, you know what, nobody knows who he is, so fuck him. Let's have William Shatner induct you into the Hall of Fame. How'd that work out? Not too well. Kevin Dunn he's quite a character, and he has more influence on the product that you see on television than anybody realizes. And he's not going anywhere anytime soon. He has a certain vision of the way things should be, and that's just the way it is. And I give his team a lot of credit. It's not just Kevin Dunn. It's Kevin Dunn and the people that work for him. WWE's production team is second to none. I will sing their praises until the day that I die, because they do a phenomenal job in terms of television production, in terms of the video packages that they put together. They're very, very good at that. In terms of judging talent and all the other things, Kevin Dunn, I think, is involved in a lot of the creative meetings, I think. Maybe not all of them, but some of them. I don't know that that's such a good thing. Last thing I want to mention here before we get to the mailbag, kind of an obscure thing, but this email was sent to SE Scoops, and I happened to notice it, and I just have to mention this. There was apparently an incident at an independent show this past week or the week before that involved former WWE superstar Bull Buchanan, or if you remember when John Cena was first coming up on SmackDown with a rap gimmick, he had Bull Buchanan as his buddy. He called him B2, B squared. So think about that. John Cena and Bull Buchanan used to ride in the same troop together. So anyway, this I'm going to read you this email, and I'm going to go through it really quick. This email was sent by somebody by the name of Daniel Johns. And I mentioned that, and I keep that in mind when I get to the end of this letter here, because I wonder if you're going to think the same thing that I'm thinking. If, in fact, this letter came from, quote, Daniel Johns or somebody else. So just bear with me here. And I quote, Bull Buchanan hospitalized indie wrestler / underground rap artist Anthony One Man Crew Sanders. So One Man Crew is what I'm going to call him. That's his wrestling name, or his rap name, I guess. Bull ended up shooting on a totally wide-open one-man Crew who was not expecting to be taken advantage of in the ring. The match ended abruptly when Crew tapped out to avoid any further unprofessional conduct. Bull was angry with Crew because the booker told him that Crew did not want a job to him and that Crew was going to try to make Bull tap out. One-man Crew had no idea what Bull went into the ring with any animosity towards him until it was too late, but he remained professional about the situation. Crew, with a broken nose, mind you, shrugged it off and finished the match when most guys would have taken a count out. All of this was apparently a result of Crew's recent success, as there was a lot of jealousy towards him on the part of his co-workers due to his merchandise sales numbers and his prominent involvement in an episode of Butterbean's upcoming reality series Big Justice, due to air on Investigation Discovery later this year. Gets better. One-man Crew walked out of the match with a broken nose, a concussion, and lacerations on his face and head. Because of his ability, this is the best part, because of his ability to sell merchandise, One-man Crew legitimately made more money than anybody on the card that day, including the promoter, and who was a wrestler too, and Bull Buchanan. So, there's speculation that it was the promoter's way of, quote, humbling Crew. One-man Crew has also seen success in the music business, as he has sold over 6,000 units of his rap CD. Wow. This guy sounds like an amazing individual. Not only is he a pro wrestler by night and a rap artist by day, but he made more merchandise money than anybody else on an independent show in front of 50 people. How many t-shirts? He must have sold 5 t-shirts per person that was actually at the show. That's amazing. He doesn't give the name of the rap CD, by the way, so I'm curious. I'm curious to know what the name of this rap CD is. I'd love to listen to it. Now, again, I ask you, does that sound like an email that came from Daniel Johns, or did that email come from One Man Crew? In any event, you can see video of the incident on YouTube. You could probably just type in One Man Crew incident, and Crew is spelled K-R-U, I guess because it's cooler that way. So I guess that's our unintentional comedy for this week. Mailbag time. Want to just mention that I got a lot of emails and Facebook messages and such from people who wanted to just remind me about something I obviously forgot. I answered a question last week about why don't we see wrestlers tied up in the ropes anymore? And this person couldn't remember the last time it happened. It had been many years, and I had completely forgotten, as many of you so astutely pointed out, that we just saw that on television before WrestleMania. It was an angle on SmackDown. It might have been a week or two before the pay-per-view where CM Punk and the New Nexus attacked Randy Orton, and they dragged Orton. I think this was when Punk gave Orton the GTS backstage, and then they dragged him to the ring, and then they tied Orton up in the ropes. That was when Orton was kicking and flailing, and he broke Punk's nose. That was when Punk was bleeding. So, yeah, I had completely forgotten about that. But I guarantee you, by the way, that if you ask me a question about an angle like that from an episode of Superstars in, like, 1992, I could probably give you all the details on it. But yet, this angle that just aired about a month ago, I couldn't even remember it. So that's pretty bad. But anyway, thank you to everybody who emailed me. You are correct. I'm going to start with Victor in Houston, Texas. Do you think that WWE should bring back the Cruiserweight Championship because they have Chavo Guerrero, Sin Cara, Primo Colon, Evan Bourne, Yoshitatsu, and even Rey Mysterio? Plus, it gives roles for some of the superstars who aren't even being used. I've been listening to your show since episode 82. It's great. Keep up the good work. Thank you very much. Well, thank you, Victor. In theory, as I mentioned to Victor in my email back to him, WWE has enough talent to do a Cruiserweight division if they wanted to. And don't forget Tyson Kidd in there, by the way. I would love to see it, especially if they handled it the way that WCW used to. I mean, WCW didn't do a lot of things right, but they did just enough right to do a shitload of business in the late 90s. The only real star they ever made was Goldberg, And that was, by, I mean, really, I will give WCW credit for that to a point, but a lot of it was just Goldberg catching fire with the crowd. The NWO angle, which Bischoff borrowed from an idea that was being used in Japan, and he successfully applied it to the WCW product in this country, so I give Bischoff a lot of credit for that before they ran it into the ground. But one of the other things that WCW did so well was the cruiserweights, and they did a phenomenal job with it, in fact. Those matches were must-see television every week, and the thing about it is, I don't want to see it in WWE. I actually hope it doesn't happen, even though I'd love to see it, because WWE has always managed to screw it up when they've tried it before. They've tried the cruiserweight division once. It didn't work. They had their old light heavyweight division, and it was going okay for a while, and then they just completely abandoned it. They even had a minis division for the midget wrestlers on SmackDown for a while, and they got rid of that, too. The reality is that Vince McMahon is just not a big believer in it, and as long as he's the boss, that's simply just not going to change. Matt Hardy writes into the podcast, yes, that is his real name. Dear Solomonster, since nobody seems to be watching NXT Season 5, I don't expect anyone to watch Season 6. I've heard various rumors of plans for next season, but do you think a tag team season of NXT could work to breathe some new life into the tag team ranks? I guess this could be done one of two ways. The rookies could form a tag team, or a rookie and a mentor from a former tag team in a Japanese-style system. Second way would be a good way to slowly expose the rookie. Okay. Anyway, the main crux of it is, would a tag team season of NXT be a good idea? And as I told Matt, and I mentioned this on the podcast, that Animal from LOD said that he was told that next season WWE would feature legends mentoring the young guys. But I really like your tag team idea. The problem with that is that WWE does not place any emphasis on tag team wrestling, or worse yet, managers. And it's not as though one season of NXT is going to change that, so I just don't see the point. You know, you could do a tag team season of NXT and it could be a great show. Well, what happens when that season is over? You know, even if one tag team, let's say, wins and actually gets some sort of roster spot, you know, they're not going to go anywhere. Maybe they'll get a push for 2 weeks and then it's going to be over. So I don't have any faith at all that they would even follow up on it, so I don't see the point in doing it. Eric from New Jersey writes in, Dear Solomonster, WrestleMania 15 is one of my favorite WrestleMania shows. The matches themselves mostly suck, but there is something I really like about the show, being at the height of the Attitude Era. A lot of the really big storylines going on, and I think that added to the show. I was wondering if you had any pay-per-views that don't have many good matches, but you still really like for other reasons. That's a really good question, and the first show that comes to mind, really the main one that comes to mind, is the Survivor Series in 1998. That was the night that they did the Deadly Game Tournament when the championship was vacant. That was the night that Rock won the title for the first time and turned heel, and there was not a single good or great match on that show. A lot of the matches sucked. A lot of the matches were rushed. A lot of the matches had stupid fuck finishes. Rock beat Mankind in the finals. It may be the worst Rock-Mankind match I've ever seen compared to the other ones, which is not to say that this was, like, horrible, but they went on to have much better matches. I cannot remember a single really good match from that show, but it wasn't about really good matches. It was about fitting in all these matches because they had the tournament in one night. You had a lot of matches to get through. It was all about crowning a new champion. And there's just something about that show that I like. I think it's because we have not seen them do something like that since. You know, they don't like doing tournaments, especially tournaments in one night like that on pay-per-view. And it's not often that we see a vacant championship put up in a 14-man elimination tournament. So it's a unique concept. And that was only the second time that WWE had ever done that after WrestleMania. That was only, the first time they ever did it after WrestleMania 4, which would be the second time ever. And they haven't done it since. And I think that really was a big part of it. There was something about that show I really liked. The whole Deadly Game theme, I just thought it was really cool. But if you asked me to pick out my favorite match on the show, I couldn't even tell you. I probably would go with Steve Austin and Mankind in the semifinals, just because that was the match that had the biggest, aside from the main event with Rock turning heel, the biggest storyline twist came in that match when Shane McMahon ran in to count the fall and turn heel. That was the first time Shane McMahon turned heel and aligned with his dad, and he screwed over Steve Austin and gave Mankind the win. Other than that, I'm drawing a blank as far as any other good matches on that show. The only other show that I could think of that didn't really have a lot of great matches, but I really like and I have a fondness for, is WrestleMania 6. And there was one really good match on that show, that being Hogan vs. Warrior, which exceeded everyone's expectations. I'm not saying it was a clinic, but it was a hell of a lot better than it had any right to be. And as a younger fan, I mean, there was no bigger match at the time that you could do than Hogan vs. Warrior. And that match, unless you were a diehard Hogan fan, in which case you were probably crying a river of tears, you probably enjoyed the hell out of that match. It was a huge spectacle. And when I think of the other matches on that show, Demolition winning the tag belts from Andre and Haku was a huge moment. The crowd went apeshit for it, but it was a terrible match. I mean, absolutely, it was basically a handicap match. I don't think Andre ever tagged in once. He was, I mean, way past his prime at that point. But it was not a good match. DiBiase, I think, had a match with Jake Roberts for the $1 million belt. I don't remember too much about the match. I remember, you know, Jake didn't win the belt, but I don't remember it being a particularly good match. And Jake, I think, had come back from a pretty serious neck injury and was not anything close in the ring to what he used to be at that point. Savage had a mixed tag, him and Sherry against Dusty Rhodes and Sapphire. I wouldn't call that a great match. Entertaining, maybe, but even that might be stretching it a little bit. Heart Foundation, I remember, beat the Bolsheviks in about 8 seconds. No joke, literally 8 seconds, it was over. Yeah, WrestleMania 6 is it's not my favorite WrestleMania of all time, but it's one of my favorites, and it didn't really have any good matches, and I can't tell you why other than Hogan vs. Warrior. Alex from Tijuana, Mexico writes, "In your Solomon, so you may remember me telling you that my first memory of wrestling was the Saturday night's main event just before WrestleMania 3, hearing my brother shouting at the TV at around midnight, waking up to see what was going on, and from there I was hooked. So my question to you is, do you remember the point when you became a wrestling fan?" I don't remember the exact moment I became a fan, but it happened somewhere around 1986, 87, probably around the same time that you did. My first vivid memory of an angle was when Billy Graham, Super Schmuck, who I talked about a couple weeks ago, and at this point, Billy Graham at this point was already broken down, but he was back in the WWF as a manager for the magnificent Don Morocco, and Graham was attacked in this angle on, like, I think Superstars it was, by One Man Gang, who kept squashing him by sitting down with all of his 400-plus pounds on Graham's surgically repaired hip. So it wasn't like he had Graham in the corner for a bonsai and sat on his chest. Graham, if I remember correctly, was laying either in the middle of the ring or in the middle of the ring by the ropes, and One Man Gang just kept coming down on his hip. And his hip was either surgically repaired or he might have gotten a hip replacement at that point. Looking back at it, it was obviously a rather tame, hokey angle. But it horrified me at the time, to the point where I still remember it. So, that's my early memories. And I'll throw this question out to all the people listening. You know, when did you become a wrestling fan? What were you watching? Were you a WWF fan in the Northeast? Were you a WCW fan? Were you a fan of Japanese wrestling? If, you know, we have a lot of international listeners who come from all over the world. So perhaps there was something in England, something in Asia, that got them hooked on wrestling, and then they became familiar maybe with the American product. I don't know, but I'll throw the question out to everybody listening. Write in, let me know when you became a wrestling fan. Do you remember the exact moment, the exact match, the year, the date, the event, the promotion? What made you become a wrestling fan? What got you hooked? What's your earliest memory? Email me and let me know. And if I get enough responses, I'll share them on the show next week. Got an email here from Noah. "Dear Solomon Monster, big fan of the show. Started listening a couple of months ago, and I have to say, after each episode of Raw or SmackDown, normally after seeing something that perplexes me, pisses me off, or pleases me, I think, man, I wonder what Solomon Monster will say about this. Have not missed an episode of the Sound Off since I started listening." Well, thank you for that. Anyway, his question here, "Is it just me, or did Raw get the better deal with the draft? Wasn't the point supposed to help boost the SmackDown roster with the loss of Edge? I mean, SmackDown lost most of its bigger stars like Rey Mysterio, Del Rio, Big Show, McIntyre, Kofi Kingston, and Jack Swagger, not to mention Dolph Ziggler a few weeks ago. In return, they get Randy Orton, Sin Cara, Sheamus, Daniel Bryan, and Yoshitatsu. Yes, they got Mark Henry and a few others all, but still, it seems like they simply freshen things up with some new names, as opposed to helping add some real star power to the SmackDown roster. Well, it's hard to argue that point. Before Mark Henry turned heel, and to be honest, even now that he has turned heel, I'm at a loss to really come up with who the star heel performers are on SmackDown. You know, Wade Barrett is still on SmackDown. Sheamus is a heel, and he's on SmackDown, although he has not been pushed as a main eventer in months. I said Mark Henry. Who do you have? Who do you have after that? You've got Randy Orton as the top babyface. You've got Christian, who, unless he goes heel, is a babyface. You've got Sin Cara, and I'm not sure they're ready to put him in a main event yet. You've got Daniel Bryan, who should be in main events and is not. You've got Kane, and Kane, who was a heel for months, is once again a babyface. So SmackDown is in real bad shape. It was in bad shape before the draft when they lost Edge, and they're in just as bad shape, if not worse now, in my opinion. They practically have no heels on that brand. You've got Brodus Clay. Brodus Clay is the designated guy who takes the fall in any tag team match that he's in. Brodus Clay could be a monster if they wanted to portray him as that, and they have done nothing to portray him as a monster at all. Alex Riley moved to SmackDown again. Are they going to put him in main events by himself without The Miz? They could, but is anybody in the world going to take Alex Riley seriously? I don't see it happening. So I agree. And the point wasn't so much to make SmackDown better at the expense of Raw. The point was they lost another main event guy, and they felt that things were stale. SmackDown did need some help, but they wanted to freshen both rosters up. And I agree that Raw got the better end of it. You know, Raw still has John Cena, which is the biggest star in the company. They've got CM Punk for now, until he leaves. I'm sure when, you know, if a Jericho or a Batista came back, I'm almost positive they'd come back on Raw. The word is that when The Undertaker is ready to come back, technically he's still a SmackDown star. They're not even going to bother explaining it. When The Undertaker comes back, he's coming back to Raw. You've got The Miz. You've got Alberto Del Rio. You've got John Morrison. Who else do we have on Raw? They got Kofi Kingston back. So, Rey Mysterio, of course. So, yes, Raw is in much better shape than SmackDown is. I got an email from somebody who didn't bother including his name, and he sent me this one-line email that said, "Been listening since episode 147. I was just wondering whatever happened to the Buggy Man. I just always wondered and have never been able to figure it out." And I shit you not, it took me about 7 minutes of just pondering this to figure out what the fuck is a Buggy Man. Is he talking about an exterminator? I didn't know what he was talking about. And then I figured, he meant the Boogeyman. So if, in fact, this person is referring to the Boogeyman, and he has not verified that he has, he sent me an email back that was blank, which doesn't do me any good. But if you, in fact, are talking about the Boogeyman, he was released by WWE and still wrestled independently. Although I must say now, after reading that email, the Boogeyman could be an interesting gimmick. You can have like I said, an exterminator. Perhaps it's somebody who comes to the ring on a horse and buggy, perhaps. There's a multitude of different ways you could go with that. And lastly here, our buddy Civ Vicious from Orlando writes in two questions. Number one, does Alberto Del Rio actually own those cars, or is it all kayfabe? If he actually owns them, I'm going to start training to be a luchador and get paid. Yeah, they are kayfabe. He does not own all of those cars. Second question here, do you know who the Big O is featured on the recent Z Long Island Story episode? Is he anybody, perhaps trying to get noticed by WWE? Perhaps the Long Island Ice Z is starting a stable. I have no idea who the Big O is, but I was as entertained by the most recent episode as any of the other ones, and if any of you are not familiar with or are not watching any of Zack Ryder's episodes on YouTube, the Z Long Island Story, check it out, because it's really entertaining, and especially the stuff with him and his dad. His dad has some cameos and plays along. Apparently the running gag here on the show is that his dad is a huge mark for John Morrison. And every time Zack Ryder has the camera in hand and he's walking into his dad's house wondering where the hell he is, he hears Morrison's theme music hit. And then he goes into the bedroom to find his dad mimicking John Morrison, and he's all embarrassed. And just the whole way it's done, it's very entertaining. So go on YouTube right now and check that out if you have not already done so. Actually, we'll do one more here. This one comes from Stuart. He's been a listener since an episode in the 60s. I assume he means episode 60-something, not the 1960s, unless there was a sound-off back then that I'm unaware of. Wasn't the whole reason the GM became anonymous because of a fear of getting beaten up by the Nexus. So since the Nexus isn't really big anymore, shouldn't he or she reveal themselves? Are you sick of the whole anonymous GM thing by now? Of course I'm sick of it. I think everybody is sick of it. And you know what? At first I hated it, and then it kind of grew a little bit to the point where it was getting a reaction from the crowd, and it became a clever thing, and I assumed that they were going to blow it off by now. And to think that at WrestleMania 27 at the Georgia Dome, we had to hear that stupid fucking dinging noise because this thing is still going on is just perplexing to me. And it really makes me wonder if they don't have an end game in mind. They don't know who it's going to be. They haven't made their mind up yet. So, yes, it annoys the hell out of me. And you make a good point. Originally, they were saying that, you know, Vince McMahon himself, the owner of the company, was beaten up. And he was off TV for months after being beaten up by Wade Barrett and the Nexus. And, you know, the GM feared for their safety, and therefore they were going to remain anonymous. And I don't know anybody who would consider the new Nexus to be any sort of threat. So certainly if the GM had a fear before, that fear should have disappeared, but yet they are still anonymous. So you make a very good point. Happy birthday to Stuart, by the way. He turned 19 years old on Thursday of this week. So happy birthday, buddy. By the way, I mentioned in one of the mailbags, I think a couple of weeks ago, in response to a question, that Vince Russo's son was now working in production for TNA. And I just thought, in light of that, I would also mention the fact that Michael Cole has a 24-year-old son named Calvin, who is also now working for, not TNA, but working for WWE in a TV production capacity, and he travels with his dad. So I just wanted to mention that for those of you who are unaware. If you have any questions for the mailbag, you can send them to thesolemonster, all one word, at gmail.com. Still the best way to get your question answered on the show. I try to fit as many in as I can. I don't get to all of them. I apologize for that. But thesolemonster at gmail.com is the best way. Twitter.com/solemonster. Facebook.com/thesolemonster. By the way, there is a Solemonster Sounds Off fan page on Facebook, as there has been for quite some time. And there's not as much content that I post on there, although that may change soon. And you can find a link to it if you go to the info section on my Facebook page under things that I like. Solemonster Sounds Off is listed there, or you could just type it in the search box, and if you would be so kind as to like that page, that would be terrific. So you could find that on Facebook, and of course, you can subscribe to this show in iTunes. It will not cost you a dime. It is free. It's like those free apps. There's nothing better than a free iPhone app, except a free Sound Off. They're all free. They don't cost you anything. You can subscribe in iTunes and have the shows automatically delivered to you each time a new one is posted. That's going to do it for this week. We'll be back next weekend with episode 158. For those of you who celebrated, enjoy Cinco de Mayo this week. We'll see you next time.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joe from Northern Ireland.
Hi, I'm AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solemonster Sounds Off on SEScoops.com.